Hello, and welcome to the best podcast for 2020 in the Valley, as voted on by the readers of Phoenix Magazine. You've downloaded another stellar episode of Mack Watson Talks. On this episode, President Biden's first 100 days, how's he doing, and a promise of free education? How could that be? Also, what's the hardest part of getting the vaccine to people who need it? I'll tell you. What's open here in the Valley now that we're flirting with 100-degree temperatures? Yikes. And one state representative says, please remain vigilant when it comes to the coronavirus. I'll have that story as well. That and a whole lot more is coming up, so let's get started. This is episode 140.
You're listening to Mack Watson Talks, Season 2. Voted best podcast in the Valley for 2020 by the readers of Phoenix Magazine.
Joe Biden has been president for over 100 days now. How is it looking? How's it going?
Well, you know, I saw the other day that someone had mentioned it's so nice to be back to the quote, that guy's full of shit, and not the, oh my God, he's going to get us all killed.
So that's a better yeah, presidency.
You're full of crap rather than,
oh crap, you're going to get us killed.
You're blowing a bunch of hot air is way better than, oh my God, we're all going to die.
Yeah. Well, according to a Reuters Ipsos poll, a level of support that his Republican predecessor, Donald Trump, never achieved, more than half of Americans approve of Joe Biden's nearly 100 days on the job.
And that's saying a lot. Like, Trump never reached that level of approval, and we lived in fear. The further into his presidency we lived in more and more fear about what the outcome was going to be and about the things that were going to sort of rain down on us from the decisions he was making.
You know, it also reminds me of the kids. I hate to bring that up, but it also reminds me of the kids where every day you didn't know how you were going to be gaslighted. And every day you had to figure out what was true and what was not true. Just like with the kids. The kids will try to gaslight us with stuff that they say and stuff that they do. And after time, over a period of time, you just get tired of it. And you get tired of having to figure out what's true and what's not.
Yeah. And it's one thing to be blustery and sort of bluffing and like, oh, I'm so great. Look at me. I'm the greatest. And it's another thing to be like literally attacking on the attack,
right?
And everybody feeling like this person is going to come unhinged, like they're going to be the ruination of all of us.
Right. Biden received the highest marks for his handling of the coronavirus pandemic, 65% supporting his response.
That's amazing.
In January.
Doesn't it feel safer? I mean, I feel like we are at that sort of level of safety that we never could achieve in all of 2020.
38% in January approved of Trump's handling of the health crisis. 90% of Democrats, 61% of independents, and 39% of Republicans said they approve of Biden's response. 52% of Americans also said they liked Biden's handling of the economy. 53% said the same about his impact on U.S. jobs, which in both cases were a few percentage points higher than Trump's marks on jobs and the economy during his final month in office. So overall, Biden's doing a stellar job, right?
Yeah, and those marks are higher than Trump did in his first 100 days in office. I mean, I think he's taken us back to, maybe it's business as usual, but to a place that is familiar and that does not feel like we're teetering on the edge of the cliff.
The only downside, his strongest criticism Biden received was the continued surge of migrants arriving at the U.S.-Mexico border.
Yeah, and that problem transcends administrations.
Yeah.
It does.
Right. It's not just Biden's problem.
It does. I mean, Trump's handling of it was harsh and did not follow those basic humanitarian ethics that I think the world expects, particularly of the United States.
The guidelines, yeah.
But it wasn't just a Trump problem, because it was an Obama problem too. It was, you know, it was a Clinton problem. It was, you know, it transcends every administration, because as long as we live in a prosperous democratic republic, which is what our country is, people are going to seek to come here from places where they live under tyranny and oppression.
Now, Biden also spoke to Congress earlier this week. And people were wondering, okay, what is the plan? What is he going to do? Well, he talked about a lot of things.
Which is where that comment of somebody said, it's nice to be like, hey, that guy's just full of BS, then oh my God, yeah. we're going to die.
Right. Good point. But one thing that caught my attention was, I mean, he talked about human infrastructure. He talked about, you know, basically taxing the rich and giving it to the poor, you know, which is true democratic principles. I understand that. But
it's a democratic principle in terms of like the Democratic Party. But if you think of living in a democratic republic, which is what we live in, the idea of taxing the rich is, because otherwise, in a true democracy, everybody pays their own way.
That's right.
That's not.
That's
and so
right.
It's really a true democratic republic sort of, what am I trying to say? It's a principle.
Principle?
Yeah.
Biden came up with a plan. He praised the nation's K-12 education system for fueling America's economic growth for almost a century, but he says the system may no longer be sufficient as the foundation for future prosperity. So what Biden has come up with is this idea of pre-K through 14, not K-12, but pre-K through 14.
So they're going to pay for the first 2 years of college?
Or community college, yes.
Right. And then they're going to establish pre-K programs within the public school system
yes.
that we can send our three-year-olds to.
Yes. Mm. Do you like the idea?
I like the idea of the three-year-olds getting into the school system earlier because I think that early intervention and early that earlier you can start with kids. You know, there's that organization in Arizona that's called First Things First, and they really talk about the earlier you can get your kids involved in being read to and recognizing letters and colors and all those things engages their brain. It makes them better learners when they get into school.
Mm-hmm.
And so it really is targeting a demographic that traditionally has just left their kids with a babysitter sat in front of a TV, you know, and not really an engaging sort of childcare environment. So I really do like that. As far as paying for the first 2 years of college, I think that's a big dream. It's a big dream. I'm not really sure if it's as important, but maybe it is. I mean, maybe high school graduates are not really marketable in the workplace.
Well, that's
in the workforce other than to work at McDonald's. I don't know.
That's what they're saying, that the high school diploma has eroded, that you really can't get a full-time sustaining job without some kind of other education. So they're coming up with a community college or two grades above senior year of high school that you can take that's free. That's all free. See, that's the thing. All of this will be paid for by the government.
So, I mean, I like the idea of it being like federal student aid, where it's like you're guaranteed 2 years of tuition or something like that if you go to these particular colleges. So not if you go to Harvard. I mean, that's like if you go to
private colleges,
you
right.
go to private high school, you're going to pay for that. If you go to, you know, but if you go to these colleges that are public universities, public colleges, and the colleges will buy to be able to participate in that program to up their own admissions. Because once you have kids there for 2 years, they're more apt to continue on and finish a four-year degree or even go on to graduate work.
The resistance might come from families and students, given that almost two-thirds of adults over 25 years old haven't completed a college degree. I find that fascinating. I find that amazing.
So you,
almost
you'll
two
say
thirds.
There'll be resistance from people who don't have a college degree, and they're like, "Why are we letting
right.
these guys? Like, how
right.
dare we let the next generation have something better than we
right.
did?
Some form of
that
education beyond high school,
like a great dysfunctional family.
Well, it's kind of like
our country is a great dysfunctional family.
Well, that's true. It's kind of like I didn't need one. I got a good job, or I did what I needed to do. Why does my kid need one? I guess, or why does
right.
not everybody needs to go to college? Is the
in my family, my older sisters. We're always like, because there was four older kids and two younger ones, and we were like two different families. And the older ones would always be like, "Why are the younger ones getting this? And why are they getting that?" Like we were somehow taking advantage of the system of being children or something.
The system of being children.
Right? And so they were always wanting it to be like that. My parents should give us what they were given or not given, you know. And I think that's there. So I do think that's inherently people do that. They look at other people coming up below them, and they're like, "Oh no, you should have to pay your dues. You shouldn't get it easy."
Biden says 12 years is no longer enough today to compete with the rest of the world in the 21st century.
And I think that is comparable to what happens in some European countries, and then also in in Asian countries like China and Japan, where it's not necessarily that they have 14 years of public school, but that once they, a lot of times once they finish in like actually more like 11th grade, that then they go on to 3 years of some kind of vocational training, and that's all part of their public school system.
Right. Right. So Biden would want to expand that and make it pre-K through 14. But I mean, again, it sounds like a good idea. I just don't know how practical it is. I just don't. I just don't trust the government to do a good job in handling all of it.
How does it get paid for?
And well, you're saying, that's all
you're
to tax the rich.
Raising the taxes on the rich will do that. And I do know that the more money you make, the less sting it is to be in a higher tax bracket. So
right.
I'm not disagreeing with that. And I don't think I think that there's people like Trump in particular that would look to avoid paying any taxes at all, thinking this is my money and I should keep it. And then there's other people who live in this country that are like, yeah, like you and I, once you're in that higher tax bracket, yeah, it kind of sucks to have to pay that much in taxes. But on the other hand, like, why wouldn't we pay that? Why wouldn't we participate in this republic that we live in, and including services for our own kids and ourselves, and understanding that we have the means to do it? And why wouldn't we give that much back? So I don't think there's as going, particularly now that it's not like people who are making 200 or 250,000 or more, because I think that still was kind of touching the middle class. With the new threshold, I think, is 400,000.
Right.
That's a totally different place.
Yeah, that's true. Also in the news this week, with temperatures forecast to be in the upper 90s, even a potential for 100 degrees, lovely, for the first time this year, some may be looking for ways to beat the heat. So what is open and what is not as far as around the valley?
Mm.
CDC, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, has said people should continue to avoid large gatherings and wear a mask when unable to socially distance themselves. So what should we do? How about the 10th Arizona Balloon Classic? That is going on this weekend.
Mm.
Goodyear.
Fun to do. Outdoors. Don't have to be close to people to see the balloons go up in the sky.
There you go.
Right.
Maricopa County Home and Garden Show.
Are you kidding me? I would not do that.
Okay.
That's too many people, and that's inside. But whatever. If that's float your boat, go ahead and go to it. It's in the big stadium, so it's not.
That's at Westworld. Westworld of Scottsdale is where the Maricopa Home County.
It's like a big stadium, or I don't know what it is. A big indoor space.
Big arena. Know. Yeah. Also, Six Flags, Hurricane Phoenix Harbor.
No, but I wouldn't go to those even if there was no coronavirus, because I think those water parks are like gross.
Golfland Sunsplash, another attraction that you probably think is gross.
No, I mean, I like mini golf, and I don't know, I don't mind the splash pads. I just somehow think that the public water parks, they can be a little bit ick. I don't know why.
The Oasis, jeez, the Oasis at Arizona Grand Resort.
Oh, that's always fun. That's always fun. I mean, you have to pay to go there, but it's cool that they opened. They have that lazy river and all that stuff in there. Yeah.
Great Wolf Lodge, the indoor water park. I'm sure you're a big fan of that.
You know.
Fairmount Scottsdale Princess, open to both guests and non-guests.
You have to pay, but yeah, they have a lot of good outdoor kind of fun. Stuff to do, yeah.
The Hyatt Regency Scottsdale Resort and Spa at Gainey Ranch.
Mm-hmm.
Riverwatch Water Park at Hilton Phoenix Resort at the Peak.
Oh, yeah, that one's really cool. They have the same thing, like a lazy river and everything, yeah.
Children's Museum of Phoenix, that's open. The Children's Museum, the Idea Museum, the Arizona Museum of Natural History.
Those museums are open, but they still require masks inside. And so for those of you who can't get your kids to wear a mask or don't want your kids to wear a mask, then that's probably not going to be a good idea for you.
The Arizona Science Center. The Heard Museum.
Oh my gosh. The Science Center and the Children's Museum are so much fun. Really, they are.
Hall of Flame Museum of Firefighting. That's open as well.
I've never been there. It sounds kind of cool, though.
The Phoenix Police Museum is open.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of cool places, the Phoenix Zoo is open. But again, you have to wear a mask even outside.
Even though it's outside. And there's been a lot of strum and drum over that on the internet about people really mad that the zoo would make their little kids wear a mask outside. And I think, you know, but you just, the way crowds work in a place like a zoo is like you could be alone and then suddenly you find yourself in this huge horde of people. And I think it does make sense to wear a mask still right now.
The Desert Botanical Garden, that's open.
That's fun.
Wildlife World Zoo is open.
That would be my choice over the Phoenix Zoo. I mean, sorry, Phoenix Zoo, but really, Wildlife World Zoo is my preference all the time.
Odyssey Aquarium is open, and Sea Life Arizona.
Yeah, those are cool places to go. Yeah.
The other thing that is coming back, too, is that the cruises are coming back this summer. Because the CDC has come up with some guidelines and the cruise lines have said, okay, we can do that. You have to have 95% of the crew, 98% of the crew vaccinated and 95% of the passengers fully vaccinated.
It looks like a little bit like vaccine passports, but they're not. They just want you to show proof that you were vaccinated when you get on board.
But I guess how do you get on board without showing proof?
Well, probably,
you're part of the 5%?
Well, probably when you make the reservation, you have to submit it within a certain amount of days to secure your reservation. So it'd be like the same as you have to put down a credit card. You have to put down your vaccine cards. You're going to have to be able to like scan and send those in or whatever so that they have those before they accept it. And then if you're an exception to getting the vaccine, say legitimately, like you have something in the vaccines you have an allergy to, so you can't get the vaccine, then you would be able to show that exemption like through a doctor's order. So I think that's legit. I mean, I've been telling you all along, I would totally pay more money to ride on a plane where I knew everybody was vaccinated. So I think that's, and a cruise ship is like this little micro world,
right,
which is where we saw the first outbreaks of it. Remember?
Yes.
It's because it's such close proximity and so hard to clean every surface of even outdoor spaces, even though it's like that indoor outdoor living when you're on a cruise ship, right?
Right.
And that it was spread that way, and that's how so many people got it.
The CDC spokesperson said cruises could begin passenger voyages from the United States in mid-July, depending upon cruise lines' pace and compliance with the CDC.
And really, I don't know if we've talked about it specifically on the podcast, but what has gone on with cruise lines and their ships since the coronavirus started is in a lot of places, they can't just park the ship at a dock and then lock the door and walk away. A cruise ship doesn't work that way.
That's right.
It has to be
on the water, right?
First it has to be in the water, and crew has continually doing responsibilities to keep everything in working order on the ship. You can't just park it and walk away. It's, first of all, you're talking about millions of dollars in, you know, these are
right.
these are like $300 and $400 million ships, and you can't just leave them and walk away. They have that continual process of being cleaned and keeping the engines running and making sure everything's, you know, well oiled and working. And if you tried to shut it all down and walk away, the startup on it and or the potential that it wouldn't start up and there'd be, you know, breakdown in systems is too great. And so the cruise lines have had crews on these ships,
yeah,
wherever they're not even really docked in a port. They're sitting out on the water anchored, that have just been there just doing their job, but nobody's on the ship every day because it has to be done. And in some cases, there were people stranded that couldn't get back, that, you know, because a lot of people who work on cruise lines work internationally. They tend to be younger people who are like, oh, I'm going to go work on this cruise line out of Norway or something. And then suddenly, you know, their country is, say, like France is saying, we're not letting anybody come back in. And then there's this kid stuck on this Norwegian cruise line that, you know, I mean, he's still getting paid, but he wants to go home because there's no guests on there. It's not the same job that he signed up for. So that's been happening for the last year. And it's really, it's mind-boggling how much money it costs them to keep these ships afloat and
right,
running. Because
right,
you can't just decommission a ship and then commission it again. Like, that's not how it works. And I think that a lot of people are not even aware of like the complete sort of mechanics of how all that works to even run a cruise ship.
Also in the news, as far as the coronavirus is concerned, an Arizona legislator has tested positive for coronavirus.
This one just totally is like, this is why we're still wearing masks, people.
Over 2 months after her final vaccination, State Representative Alma Hernandez of Tucson said in a press release this week that she was fully vaccinated 11 weeks ago, still wore a mask when out and practiced social distancing and good hygiene, but still became ill with the coronavirus anyway. She lost all sense of taste and smell. She had fever and migraine headaches. She said she was quarantining at her home, where she would remain for the next week. She said, I encourage you to take this seriously and continue practicing COVID protocols. The pandemic has not come to an end. Do not let your guard down even after you've been vaccinated.
And again, the vaccine does not create a bubble around you that's like repelling the virus.
That's right.
The vaccine makes it so that when you get the virus, you're not as sick. So if she wasn't vaccinated, she might have ended up in the hospital on a ventilator, right?
Mm-hmm.
but she was vaccinated, so she didn't. But that doesn't mean you can't get it.
Right. Right. I mean, it's just amazing that that a representative is getting it. But I'm glad she's saying, hey, look, you still have to be diligent.
She's using her position and her voice to tell people, like, look, you're not immune. This is not immunity.
Right.
This vaccination is really allowing you to have the tools within your body to fight the disease. It doesn't mean that you can't catch the disease.
Right. That's just some of the news this week. Thanks, Cricket.
Thank you, Mac.
You're listening to Mac Watson Talks, Season 2. Voted best podcast in the Valley for 2020 by the readers of Phoenix Magazine.
Have you joined us on Patreon yet? You haven't? You're missing some great stuff, including stuff like this. That being said, let's just put it this way.
Like, when he was at our house one time, when my dad was there, your mom was like, do not let him watch Jiminy do electrical projects.
Why was that?
And I was like, why? And she's like, because I do not want him doing electrical projects.
Yeah, mom's got a big fear of the house burning down to the ground. And I don't know where that comes from, because the house has never caught on fire, but she has this big fear.
Most people haven't ever caught on fire.
Right, right. But she's got this fear.
She's seen your dad paint and build, and she's like, if you do that with electricity, it's like playing with fire.
It's deadly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So make sure you get on Patreon, patreon.com/MacWatsonTalks. Become a member, get VIP stuff, stuff you're not going to hear anywhere else, and maybe even some cool swag. That's Patreon, patreon.com/MacWatsonTalks. Time for the smackdown, and this time I'm smacking down the coronavirus again. President Biden offered voters a singular promise when he campaigned for the White House. He would do a better job on the coronavirus pandemic than Donald Trump. Well, now 100 days into his presidency, Biden can point to a host of figures showing that he has kept his promise, from plunging death rates to soaring vaccination numbers. But the hard part may be just beginning, as the mission switches from churning out vaccines to getting people to actually get them, especially those who are reluctant, the people who live remotely, and the disadvantaged. We're in a volatile period that is delicate, dangerous, and requires special care, so says one expert. We've moved from a scarcity of vaccines to abundance of vaccines, but they're now going unused because of hesitancy and refusal. If the first challenge was logistical, the second is societal. It will require Biden to battle false information, challenge political divisions, and overcome prejudices. How well he succeeds could determine the course of his presidency. Biden sees a loftier purpose in conquering the virus, showing that government can work. That would not only reassure Americans who are cynical about politics, he thinks, but also show the world that democracies can protect their citizens better than populist authoritarians. To achieve that, public health experts say Biden must do more to address the pandemic globally. The United States has stockpiled the rights to millions of extra vaccines, while other countries remain desperate to get them. So Biden took a step in the right direction, offering more than 60 million doses to share of the AstraZeneca vaccine with other countries. Craig Spencer, director of the Global Health and Emergency Medicine at New York Presbyterian Columbia University Medical Center, says the fact that we are going to have this massive feast and then have another feast in the fridge just in case we're still hungry after the first one while the rest of the world starves is not appropriate. We need more clarity into what those decisions are going to be. Still, after 100 days, Biden can cite some notable milestones. More than half of American adults have received at least one dose of the vaccine. Some weeks, the United States has administered more than 3 million shots a day. Daily deaths from COVID-19, the disease caused by the coronavirus, have plummeted to a daily average of about 720 from 4,400 on the day Biden took office. Still, a definitive end to the pandemic remains elusive. The United States is at an inflection point, as many who have been clamoring for the vaccine now have access to it or have gotten it. The harder job is selling the shots to the roughly 20% of Americans who still say they do not want to be vaccinated. And that is the smackdown. You hear the music, you know what that means. It's time for the last word. A property line dispute between neighbors in southeast Michigan led to the construction of a wall. But not just any wall, a 250-foot-long wall of poop, or a compost fence. The cow manure is normally spread out on the farmer's field next door, but now the turds are piled up as a smelly reminder as a property line dispute from last year. The stench permeates the rental house near the property line, so the report says complaints have been lodged, but local officials say there's nothing they can do since the feces is on the farmer's property. The farmer says it's not a poop wall, it's a compost fence. Well, whatever you call it, it really sounds and smells shitty, that's for sure. Until next time!
Thank you for listening to Mac Watson Talks. This episode is copyrighted and may not be reproduced in whole or part without express written permission. For more information, to become a sponsor, or to schedule an upcoming appearance by Mac or Cricket or both, visit MacWatsonOnline.com. Connect with us on Twitter, Facebook, or Patreon, and leave us a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. And if you like what you hear, share us with your friends. We love new listeners.